regulating the payday loan industry.
There is a role for government. Like with our entire financial structure, there's an important role that government plays in terms of setting the rules for how we go about our business. But there is much more to society. In fact, there's much more to the economy than simply the government. You can have all kinds of social issues. Poverty is another one. It's an important issue. It's one that governments are right to be concerned about. But it's also one that governments, their ability to get something done is limited by the very nature of their institution.
On the feature today, Brian Dykema from Cardis on a new project they're embarking on to look at ways to improve the operations of Canada's financial industry generally. In the news, the Trudeau government has announced the return of the so-called Court Challenges program. A look at what might happen to Canada's prostitution laws under the new government and the defense of those laws as they were passed last year. And Billy Graham's son on the Paris bombings.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
The new federal government has announced plans to restore funding to the so-called Court Challenges program. That funding was cut by the Conservatives a few years back. If you don't remember, the program was established almost 20 years ago as a way for purportedly underprivileged or underrepresented groups in society to launch legal challenges to various laws in the country, most particularly under the Charter of Rights. The program was always plagued with problems, though, including accusations of secrecy, conflict of interest, and a severe bias against any group or organization that was trying to defend traditional family values. Diane Watts is with Real Women of Canada, a group that tried on several occasions to get funding from the program, but was always denied.
They didn't have to report to Parliament, and at the end they didn't have to say who they gave taxpayer dollars to. The groups which were receiving funding, like LEAF and EGAL, they had representatives on the advisory board of the Court Challenges program, and sometimes they would have representatives on the board of directors, so they had friends giving them money that they obtained from the federal government. And they bragged about their successes. In the gay media, there was a statement when the Court Challenges program was cut by the Harper government. They said, in the past, no group has benefited more from Court Challenges funding than the queer community.
Now that the Court Challenges program is being reintroduced, the question that looms large is whether its new manifestation will be any less biased or hostile toward traditional values than the original one. Watts is not optimistic.
Well, they could be fair, and they could not practice discrimination against groups that support the family, for example, and that support the unborn and that aren't in favor of drug injection sites and prostitution. They could be fair, but the Prime Minister has said that he's proud to be a feminist, and he said his core values are reproductive rights and same-sex marriage. So we'll have to wait and see. We're not that hopeful. Their history isn't very good.
We'll have to wait until the first federal budget to see how much money will actually be allocated to this. Another file that the new Liberal government appears ready to revisit is Canada's new prostitution law. Justice Minister Jody Wilson-Raybould told Maclean's magazine last week that the issue would get another look, but she also insisted that, quote, the safety of the workers is fundamentally important. Julia Beasley is a policy analyst with the Evangelical Fellowship of Canada. She says if safety is indeed paramount in this discussion, Wilson-Raybould would do well to leave the current law alone, because with its emphasis on prosecuting the customers of the prostitutes, it addresses that particular issue very well.
One of the things we've been saying is that the source of the violence and the danger is not the decisions that the women are making. It's not the location where they're prostituting. The source of violence is the men who are perpetrating the violence. And so our position all along is that this legislation has gotten it right, because they're putting the focus and the attention on the source of the violence rather than saying we need to make sure that women are making better, smarter decisions, working in safer locations and so on as a way of avoiding the violence.
And if the government is considering a move toward legalization of the sex trade, Beasley says they would do well to look at other jurisdictions where this has already been tried.
We have all kinds of voices here who've been calling for decriminalization, but at the same time, if we look to countries like New Zealand or Germany, where they either decriminalized or legalized, there are now groups of women, also coalitions of former prostitutes, who are starting to speak up, and they're saying, this hasn't worked. You know, this failed us. We don't feel that our work was made any safer, and certainly it didn't reduce the stigma that they experience as prostitutes. we argue that that's because the source of the violence isn't the laws. The source of the stigma is not the laws. It's this belief that men are entitled to paid sexual access to women's bodies on their terms at all times. So our view is that we need to challenge those beliefs, and that's what these new laws do. And if we don't do that, then the misogynistic attitudes that are the source of the violence will continue.
It'll likely be early next year before this issue comes before Parliament for reconsideration. And finally, the bombing in Paris. At least 129 people were killed and 350 others wounded in six separate attacks in the French capital on Friday night. There are many things that could be said, indeed many things have been said, but one of the most succinct analyses of this event came from Franklin Graham, Billy Graham's son, on Facebook on Saturday morning. He wrote the following post, and I'll quote it. Yesterday, Paris was victim to the worst attack in France since World War II. French President François Hollande has called the attacks an act of war that will be responded to mercilessly. In the hours after the horrific attacks, some said terrorism has no religion. Do not be fooled. This attack was done in the name of Allah, the God of Islam. So we know from their own words that the Islamic State has claimed the attack on Paris, describing the city as the carrier of the banner of the cross in Europe. In this case, terrorism does have a religion. Its name is Islam, and its God is Allah. Islam is at war with us. We've witnessed its evil face firsthand, over and over. And today, the world wakes up to their threats. This attack is the first of the storm, and a warning. The Apostle Paul, who was miraculously called to Christ while en route to persecute Christians in the city of Damascus, located near the heart of embattled ISIS territory in modern-day Syria, the Apostle Paul wrote in the Bible, quote, "Therefore I exhort first of all that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings and all who are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and reverence." As we continue to pray for the people of France, we also need to pray for wisdom for the world's leaders, and that Islam will be stopped in its tracks. Back with more after this.
This past week, many Canadians participated in Remembrance Day ceremonies. At the 11th hour, on the 11th day of the 11th month, we remembered. We remembered the sacrifice of so many for our freedom. However, remembrance is not itself the end goal. It is the means to a greater end. We remember in order to be grateful, and we remember in order to remain vigilant against threats to freedom and liberty. To all our veterans, we say thank you.
And we're back on the program. The payday loan industry. In the past dozen years or so, we've seen these money marts and other payday loan facilities crop up on virtually every street corner of every town in Canada. It's a really growing industry. And there's some real problems with the industry. Brian Dykema is a program director with our friends at Cartus. We've reached him at his office in Hamilton today. Brian, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Talk to me a little bit about what the problem is with the payday loan industry. I mean, obviously, you know, we've all heard of the interest rates. It costs you $60 to borrow $500 if you don't pay within a week, that kind of thing. Run me through some scenarios of how this actually works.
It's sort of a common problem. It's a problem I think that we can all understand to some extent, because I don't know if you're like me, but I know that many people at some point in their lives run out of money. They run short for the week, an accident happens, or something unexpected takes place, and it goes just a little bit beyond the cash flow that you're normally used to. So a lot of us can turn to a variety of different sources to find that money to make up that shortfall. For instance, I know that in university, a lot of folks are looking to get home, or they need a little bit of extra money for rent, or their car breaks down and they need to have it, and they say, look, I'm going to call up mom and dad, and they can spot me the $200 to $300, maybe $500 that I need to get my car fixed so that I can go back and forth from work and that type of stuff. That's one example of a place that you can borrow. It's a natural community. It's someone from your family or someone from your church or someone from your community that you know and you have a sort of high trust relationship with and say, hey, can I borrow this to float me over? Other ways are quite common too. Some of us have credit cards. Some of us have credit lines that we use, but not everybody has those options. Some people don't have the family, the church, the community. They don't have the credit rating that enables them to get a credit card. They don't have the relationship with the bank, or they feel uncomfortable in banks. So they turn to these places, these payday loan stores, to get a quick and easy and fast injection of cash to help them float. So that's sort of how it works. You go in, you need your money, and you go get it. It tends to be very small. Often they're less than $1,000, these loans. And they're intended to sort of be a stopgap for a given financial need. The trouble is that these payday loans, not only because of the high rates, although the rates are really high, Al, some of them, you know, range from 600 to over 900% if you annualize them. But it's not just the rate. It's also things like the terms. They're often very short, less than a payday sometimes, 10 days, 5 days, what have you. And they get taken off in one big chunk. So what ends up happening is that at the end of the term, at the end of the 10 days or the 5 days, in situations where you're already tight on cash, you get that big chunk taken off in one step. And so what happens is, too often, it begins to actually start you spinning. It's almost like a tailspin.
This is more than just economics or finances. You know, there's some social realities underlying this. You've already talked about it a little bit. The people who avail themselves of the services of the payday loan industry are the very people who, because of their economic status, tend to be poor credit risks. So how do we get out of that cycle?
One thing I think that we might want to put out there is that it's not actually the poorest of the poor who are using payday loans. It tends to be people who are working poor. I think it's about 48 to 49% of the users are making just under $35,000 a year. Another 20% are making between $35,000 and $50,000 a year. So these are people with income, and in fact, most of the places need a paycheck or a pay stub to show that there's at least some chance that they're going to get it back. But you're absolutely right. The payday loan issue is one in a web of financial and economics and even social issues that come. You know, for instance, financial literacy is a huge thing. You know, payday loans are a problem, but it may be that part of the challenge is that people don't know how to budget. Or they just don't know how to deal with banks. I mean, that's a real thing. If you go into a bank, it can sometimes be intimidating. And you see all these numbers and all these things, and you're just confused by it. So it is one part of a much more complicated web of issues, but we think it's an important one.
Okay, so it's an important issue. It's so important that Cardis has launched an initiative to look at it. There have been others who've looked at this issue, though. Some federal political parties, especially the NDP, have suggested limiting the interest rates these companies are allowed to charge. But in the press release announcing your plans to look at this, you seem to downplay the notion that government has to fix this. Let me quote from the release. Rather than regulating payday loan stores out of business, Cardis believes the best way forward is to work to create market-based, community-focused alternatives. What do you mean by that?
There is a role for government. We aren't downplaying it. Like with our entire financial structure, there's an important role that government plays in terms of setting the rules for how we go about our business. That happens at the big bank level. Sometimes they're too onerous, sometimes they're not onerous enough, and what have you. But we're a think tank that says, look, there is much more to society. In fact, there's much more to the economy than simply the government. You can have all kinds of social issues. Poverty is another one. It's an important issue. It's one that governments are right to be concerned about. But it's also one that governments, their ability to get something done is limited by the very nature of their institution. And so we're not downplaying the role of government. In fact, I think there's an important role for government to play, and we'll also be exploring some of those things in our paper. But I think at the end of the day, what you have is a market. There is a demand that is going to rise for small sum loans. And the question is, how are we going to structure those markets in ways that provide a leg up rather than a ball and chain for the people who are using it?
Is the ultimate goal here to put the payday loans people out of business, to find a better way, or are they going to be part of the structure going forward?
It's an interesting question. The Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, who's got a background in finance, I think he was a London financier before he became a priest and then an archbishop, he said to one of the payday lenders in Britain, he said, look, we want to outcompete you. We want to drive you out of business by beating you on the competition. We're trying to be somewhat clinical here. I think there is a real challenge with the payday loan industry. I think there is a case for moral outrage here, but our project is to say, okay, we get that. There's a real problem. Let's try to find ways to align those interests so that we're actually using lending to help build people up and hopefully in the long term build the society and economy up as a whole.
Ryan, we're out of time. Thank you very much.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the Lighthouse News homepage, or you can send us an email, info@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.